Let me see what you can do.
Hot topics and interviews.
And that's just how we do it.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
It's the Entertainment Man Podcast.
Entertainment Man Podcast is brought to you by Crispy on the Web. Go to crispyontheweb.com for more information, social media, and much, much more. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Man Podcast. I'm your host, Chris the Man with the Podcast. Welcome to another interview podcast. It is good to be back once again. Today, I have J.V. Hillard on the podcast, who is a author, and he's going to have his book turn into a video game eventually. How's it going, J.V.?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much for having me this evening. I appreciate it.
No problem. Glad we were able to finally work this out, because it's been a crazy last few months for me, so I'm glad we got to squeeze this in finally.
No, it's my pleasure, and I understand why, so, you know, yeah. Good luck, and everything you got going on in your personal.
Thank you. Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So, you know, I am a COVID writer. You know, prior to COVID, I mm-hmm. had a, you know, a traditional professional career, right? I had focused on things. I work in DC as a defense and a technology lobbyist primarily. Mm-hmm. And then COVID hit. And when COVID happened, that was sort of the silver lining in this, is I was able to finally start to write the books that I've been telling myself I was going to write for the last 15 years. And so I used that downtime to really put together what I thought was going to be a one and done, you know, just a manuscript that I'm going to write my book and get it off my bucket list. And then I shared it with a friend of mine who was a published author. And mm-hmm. she said, you know, what you've got going on here is really good. You should talk to a development editor who can help you, you know, get better at writing. And I used that time that COVID had kind of provided with everything being closed to do that. And he introduced me to my eventual publisher. And she looked me in the face and said, you know what, you write in fantasy adventure, and you know, there are no one-offs in fantasy adventure. Mm-hmm. So we want a series, and are you up for it? And if so, we'll publish you. And, you know, I signed a 3-book series, which eventually became a 4-book series. And that's where we are today. So, you know, I pivoted away from what I thought was a, you know, a fruitful and you know, potentially long-winded professional career into an authorship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, continuing to write and finish my first series and then do stuff beyond that and get into a second series.
Awesome. Awesome. Can you tell me a little bit about your book, The Last Keeper, book one of the War Minister series? What is it about?
Yeah, so, you know, it's a classic Chosen One versus False Prophet trope, where Damus Alaric, who is the main character in the novel, is a young man who's just come to age. And, you know, he starts having visions that are imparted to him by his god, these ancients. And those visions show that one of his own sect of prophets, a fallen keeper, is coming back to take revenge. And it's what Damus has to do to foil the plans of Grey Taurus the Mad, the, you know, my villain, my Darth Vader in the series. And is it, you know, does he have a chance to mature and learn his powers in time, or does Darth Vader come back and knock him out of the box? And in this case, you know, it's a, you know, it's a 4-book series, so you're gonna guess right off the bat that doesn't happen in book one, but it sets up for a pretty nice epic ending in book four. So if you like that kind of stuff, and you like, you know, what I would describe as epic fantasy meets dark fantasy, you'd like The Last Keeper in the Warminster series.
Okay, I'm going to definitely check that out, because I'm a big Star Wars fan, so, you know, that sounds like something down my alleyway for sure.
Yeah, if you like Star Wars or Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones or Dungeons and Dragons, this is the book and series for you. It's, you know, I've been playing Dungeons and Dragons for about 20 years, and during that time, I've memorialized a lot of my characters and my campaigns, especially the ones that went well, you know, that everybody had fun with. And whether it's a dungeon master or a player, you know, being able to take those stories that you've shared with others and you've equally enjoyed and knit them all together into a series, and while making it unique, you know, you're not going to see the same kind of things you would see if you were a D&D player. You're going to see themes that might be very familiar to you and characters maybe familiar to you, but I own everything. Everything in my world's unique. My monsters are unique. My races are unique. Classes of the characters, for those of you who mm-hmm. play, understand the uniqueness of that. And I world build around it. I've created this realm of Warminster where all of this stuff happens. So that's sort of my Middle Earth, or my, you know, my Westeros mm-hmm. for that matter.
All right. What inspired you to write these books? All four of them. I thought you only did 3, but I guess now that you've told me that there's 4, what inspired you to write all 4 of them?
Yeah, so I'm only I have the first and second book are out. Third one comes out in May, and the fourth one comes out in quarter four of this year. So it'll complete the series. But, yeah. And part of it was being a storyteller, you know, being a dungeon master, being someone who's always wanted to be a writer, and then having the time to do it, you know. And so for me, it's always been on that bucket list, like I mentioned a little earlier. It's something, you know, that I've always wanted to do. And, you know, part of it, the inspiration really came from my uncle, who was paralyzed in the war. And I grew up in his bedroom. He was a quadriplegic. My mother was his nurse. And before he passed away, there was very limited things he could do. And one of the things he could do was write. You know, it was something that was a, you know, escapism from his physical condition. And playing Dungeons and Dragons was another thing that was, you know, part of his, you know, physical, you know, escapism from his physical condition that he could do. So I learned to write alongside him, because he wrote short stories and serials and mostly like pulp fiction for old school magazines, you know, and then, you know, I wanted to, you know, be like him as a young kid. That's, you know, he was a father figure to me. So it was easy for me to kind of, you know, gravitate to that and grab onto it. And then, you know, you take that desire and you match it up with some good stories that you've created through role playing. And all of a sudden, man, you've got what I think is a nice cocktail for a good series.
That's very true. What is your creative process for writing these books?
So, you know, I'm a planner, you know, at heart. I know that there are typically two types of writers, and there's some of us that are hybrids in the middle. I am not a hybrid. I am a planner. I write my books backward to forward. So I plan everything out. I have my story arcs meet, my character arcs meet. I use a whiteboard to plan it. I erase things as I put them into the novels to make sure that I've accounted for everything. And then I typically write the end of a book and then go back and write the beginning of the book. And I fill in the middles at different places, making sure that I'm hitting all the right points. And I know that's not necessarily a typical way for folks to write. But for me, I've always found that's the process that I go through as part of that. So I continue to, plan every move. Like, so I know what's going to happen at the end of book four while I'm writing book one. And it's just the way I need to write. I know others that can fly by the seat of their pants and just start writing a story. If I don't have a clear path and direction to it, I get paralyzed. Doesn't work for me. So I always try to engage. And then in terms of the creative process, like you asked, you know, I have a group of nerds that are my friends, right? Like, we all play Dungeons and Dragons to this day. You know, Sundays 6 to 10, we're on Skype and we're playing D&D from all over the country. And so, you know, I bounce ideas off of them. I use them as my beta readers. When I get writer's block, I use them to bounce ideas off of. And I think talking to another creative gets your mind flowing. You know, you start to think about things and the juices start to flow, and it breaks up that writer's block if you get it. But, you know, for me, that's a bit of my process.
Okay. I know I kind of do the same thing as you do, is just kind of like someone talks about something and like, that would be a great podcast idea. You know, it's just bouncing off the ideas from one another that helps out too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think that goes true for the professional realm. That's why you have brainstorming meetings, or you have ideation, they call it these days, where everyone sits around and throws ideas at each other and sees what sticks. You know, the writing is no different. In fact, writing might have been at the core, you know, historically of those kind of ideas. Because, you know, if you've got a good story in your head, it's not the best. You know, by talking to others, letting them read it, and let iron sharpen iron. You know, that's when you know that the story is going to get better, because you're going to have people throw ideas at you. They're going to tell you where the story falls flat. They're going to tell you where the story falls down. And then you're going to be able to take your product and make it better, before it goes to publication.
Exactly. That's very true. How long did it take to write your books?
You know, the first book took me about a year, you know, because I didn't know what I was doing. The second book took about 6 months because I was getting better at it. The third and fourth book have taken about 3 or 4 months apiece. And part of that is because my books are epic fantasy. So you're talking about an average of 140,000 words or up. You're talking about 500 pages. For those of you who don't do word counts, you do page counts. So they're thick, they're dense, they're heavy. And it's hard to do anything faster. You know what I mean? Yeah. As much as I try, it's just hard to do that. And so you try to keep pace. You want to make sure that the next product's out in time for your readers. You don't want them to forget about you. You don't want them to lose their place in the story. And when you're writing writing epic fantasy, that's hard to do. If I was writing novellas, mm-hmm. short stories, that's easy follow-ups when you're 40, 60, 80 pages, 80,000. I mean, that kind of stuff gets me into chapter 10 yeah. in my novels. Like, you know, it's like I go, it's a much denser read for folks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I try to do is build out not only the world that they're living in, but also immerse them in it. You know, I want them to know what the monetary system's like. I want them to know what the magic system's like and how it works. I want them to know what their religious system and their geopolitical systems are, and the histories of not only those systems, but the families and the people that were important to the establishment mm-hmm. of them and how they're going. You know, some that have failed, some that are emerging, some that are in the decline, and where that puts you into the story. Because I think all of that stuff makes it more believable from, you know, because you're writing in this high fantasy realm, you're already stretching the truth, and you got to have some level of realism that grounds people so that they can identify with the activity that's going on. And so I think it's important to give them those roadmaps.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. What struggles did you go through, and how did you get through the difficulties?
You know, my biggest struggles were really twofold. It was one, you know, for my day job, I never wrote dialogue. Mm-hmm. You know, the closest thing I came to that was really writing speeches for people, you know, or notes for, you know, interviews that they were doing on TV or on radio or on podcasts like this, frankly. You know, so a lot of my stuff was standard pro. It just wasn't dialogue. So I had to learn how to write dialogue, which was why it took me a year. You know, I went through a number of iterations and editing to get it to a point where the dialogue was better. And it's not something that came easy to me, mm-hmm. But I've gotten better at it. Second part was pacing. You know, I had written a story that I thought was going to be a single story. And then I had to like kind of peel that back and continue to expand it to make it three books and then eventually four. So you're looking for additional details that go into that. And so, you know, for me, I think dialogue and pacing were the two things I had to learn as part of this, not reveal everything. People don't fall in love right away. You know, there are a variety of themes, and, you know, in those themes that you kind of play out need to be identifiable to those that are reading it, whether it's mm-hmm. unrequited love, or whether it's a struggle that someone can identify with, or, you know, whether it's a path to redemption. I know you're a Star Wars fan, like you said, you know, yep. Darth Vader has a path to redemption. He returns in the end. You know, do my villains return in the end? I'll leave that up to you when you read it to find out whether that happens or not. Not all do, right? And so I think you have to write a good book with a believable ending, and all those things were the things that I struggled to learn to do in the beginning, and I've gotten better at it as I've honed my craft as an author.
All right. So you said two books are out, right?
That's right. The first book is called The Last Keeper, mm-hmm. and that is book one in the Warminster Saga. Mm-hmm. That came out right before the holidays in December of 2021. The second book came out last September, mm-hmm. and that's called Voradin's Lair. And that's book two in the series, which is kind of like, you know, that bridge to the final big mm-hmm. epic ending, right? So you get a lot of battles. You get to know the characters a little deeper. Yeah. The story plays out. You know, everybody starts to converge into what you can see coming in book three, and then eventually in book four as part of that. And so book three, the Trillius Gambit, comes out in May of 2023, a month and change from now. Mm-hmm. And then book four, The Echoes of Ghostwood, which will be the final novel in that series. It's already written. It's in editing as we speak. It'll come out probably Halloween. Maybe it might get pushed to closer to the holidays, but it'll be out before the end of the year. And then, you know, I'll have the four book series completed.
Okay. Where can they actually find it? Like, where can they find the book?
Yeah, so my publisher is a publisher called Dragon Moon Press. Mm-hmm. So if you go to dragonmoonpress.com, you'll be able to buy it there. But my books are available pretty ubiquitously. You can find them in easy places like Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Apple Books. Mm-hmm. If you prefer ebooks and downloading them, you can find them in your favorite ebook form. And or if you like audiobooks, I know some folks have, you know, are in different stages of life and can't sit around and read when they've got kids and jobs and travel and stuff like that. Audiobooks, you can find my stuff available, you know, through Audible to Apple to Kobo to Racket to you know, Scribd, like any of the places where you'll be able to download your books there. So, you know, you'll find them in about 20 or 25 different distribution channels.
All right. And I'll put some of the, what I'll do, I'll get you to, like, I'll send you an email probably tomorrow just to get some of the links and all that, like for where you can get it, social medias and all that.
That's great.
I'll send you a quick email tomorrow morning just to get all those information so I can put it up in the description below on the audio only. And then also, this is also on YouTube as well. So you guys can check it out and hopefully get his book. So
thank you very much. I hope so too.
No problem. That's what I love about this podcast. I love doing the promotional, just getting to promote you guys, and whether you're an author or you're a podcaster. I just love the whole promotional thing, and it's one of the reasons why I do this interviews for the last almost a year and a half. That's scary.
Well, I'll tell you this: we thank you. We need all the help we can get out here, especially those of us that have small publishing houses we're not one of the big four or five publishers. We don't have publicists. Some of us don't have agents at that level, or even independent authors. They can use this kind of service too. So we appreciate you as much as you appreciate us.
No problem. So your book is being turned into a video game. What's the process with that like?
it was something that came out of the blue. A friend of mine that read the novels, and he had a tech company that creates augmented reality and virtual reality video games. And so he's taking the realm of Warminster, and I've licensed him the intellectual property from the novels to create the game. And so you'll be able to eventually go into the game, create your own virtual habitat, create your own avatar, and play the game in a way that, my job is really to kind of storyboard the game, to make it as close to the novels as possible, with knowing that people might not want to do everything that happened in the novels, right? They want to do something different. So if your avatar wants to become a blacksmith and sell your services back to other characters in the novel and get their gold for doing it, you can do that, right? You don't have to be an adventurer type. You're going to be able to create your own stuff. You'll be able to own your own land. You'll be able to develop your own castles. You'll be able to ascend to different levels. But what's cool about what he's doing is it goes a little bit beyond that. It's, so if you, in the game, you slay the dragon and you recover its treasure, there are going to be things inside the game that you're going to be able to take outside to commercial applications. So you slay the dragon and you get this scroll, and your character opens it up and it says, "Congratulations, in order for you to level up, go to your nearest Subway and scan this QR code and you'll get a free sandwich and a Coke." And once you do that, your character levels up.
Yeah.
But Subway gets you in the door, right? So there's some things like that. We're starting to see the proliferation of that kind of technology in video games, and it's just coming. So in 2024, we'll see the launch of the augmented reality game. In 2025, we'll see the launch of the virtual reality game, and you'll be able to meet some of the characters, both the good guys and the bad guys, from the realm of Warminster in the game, and challenge them and fight them or align with them, to overthrow the big bad evil guys at the end.
Yeah, I'm a big gamer, and I like playing Minecraft. And when you say slay the dragon, you just made me think of that Ender Dragon I slayed so many times. I've probably killed it about 5 to 10 times over the course of the last few years. But as soon as you said that, I'm gonna check this out. Definitely.
It's a standard fantasy game, so you expect wizards and knights and shining armor and dragons and evil monsters and quests and all that kind of lost treasure, like all that kind of stuff you're gonna find in the game. And if you like those kind of games, especially first person sort of games, where you're looking through the eyes of your own character, one that you've created for yourself, you're gonna like the realm of Warminster.
Definitely. And we'll stay in touch afterwards for sure, and you can let me know when it comes out. Here's a question. I guess we don't know what platforms it'll be on, like Steam or Epic Games, or I guess you won't really know yet.
Not yet. We're gonna find that out Q4 this year. I'll have a little bit more information for you then, and I'll pass it along.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. What was your initial response when you heard they were going to make your book into a video game?
I was shocked. I hear all the time, people ask the question of, when's the Netflix show coming out, or who's going to turn this into a movie? And you hear those things, and people ask you questions like, which actors or actresses would play certain characters in the novels? And those are fun questions to answer. And things like that. But no one's ever asked me, are you going to have a video game? And it's funny that it just kind of came out of the blue. And when I heard it, I was like, oh, this is a great idea. Because I, like you, am also a gamer. So for me to go back and kind of relive the experience on the other side of the table, helping to design the game. Now, I'm not a techie, so I'm not actually doing the coding. I'm not creating the game. But my role is to really go in and make sure that the game stays within the confines of the realm of Warminster and kind of follows the rules, so that the money's referred to in the right way, and the weapons referred to in the right way, and the characters are there and things like that. And you look, the game's going to take its own course. It won't be exactly like the books, but mm-hmm. there'll be enough there that people that read the novels should be able to follow the game pretty easily and know where it goes. So it's been fun to work on it from the outside, you know, and sitting on this side of the table. Now on the inside, it's just been, you know, a lot of fun. And I'd love to see, I think the next thing that I'd love to see this turned into is a graphic novel. I think it would be a great graphic mm-hmm. novel slash comic. You know, and there's just so much material that they, that someone can use to do that with. I would think that that might be, you know, a nice follow-up to the game. But let's, you know, let's, I need to make the game successful.
Yeah.
Hopefully those that play the game will buy the books and vice versa. So.
Oh, definitely. I'm going to be probably getting the books first and then the game afterwards. But, no, I just got into another video game called Contraband Police, and I'm hooked right away. Doesn't take much for, it's just the, I guess it takes the first few seconds in a video game for you just to get that hook. Same with a book too, like you read the first few chapters like, oh, I really like this, I want to keep on reading, and you just, next thing you know, you're right halfway through the book or halfway through the game, like, I really love this game.
Yeah, you know, that's the hook, right? Like, yeah. When someone picks up your novel, mm-hmm. the first thing they look at it in the store is the cover. Mm-hmm. Cover's got to grab them, right? And then the next thing they do, they turn it over and read the blurb. You know, is this something yep. I'm going to want to read? And then when they start to read that prologue or that mm-hmm. first chapter, you got to punch them in the face. You're going to be like, I'm pulling you right in. And you're going to have to continue to turn the pages. And when I get to the end of the chapter, you're going to go to the next chapter mm-hmm. and start out the next chapter by dropping you right into a scene. And, you know, it's like that kind of approach that you need as an author or a video game production company to do that. You got to pull them in. And so mm-hmm. whoever did your police game, you know, did it well enough that you got addicted in the first couple of seconds playing it. We're going to have to do the same thing. We want to punch you in the face and say, you're not turning this off. You're going to continue to play.
Well, I heard it from a YouTuber on YouTube. I watch him play video games and all that. And I'm like, I really like this game. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to get it so I can just try it out for myself. And I kind of screwed up recently, but you know, it is what it is.
Well, that's okay. I mean, look, we're all supposed to screw up in video games. Yeah. That's why we keep playing, so you can respawn, right? Yeah,
exactly. What do you expect the outcome of the video game when it's completed?
You know, I expect it to be the first of several. You know, I think that, you know, the first game will likely follow along and end with the first novel. The second will be the second novel, third and fourth, right? So I think mm-hmm. there'll be follow-ups behind that. You know, and my guess is that we will be launching it in a way that, you know, folks are, they could play it on their computer, and they're going to be able to play it on their phones, and then eventually they're going to be able to put on their headsets and play it. So we mm-hmm. want it to be for everybody. We want you to be able to do it in that way, so that, you know, we capture every, because not everybody plays games in the same way. And this way we've got the most broadest of audiences, mm-hmm. you know, and that way you can play a game however you want to play it.
Exactly. Because everybody has a different system, whether it's PC, you know, PlayStation, Xbox, VR. Actually, I've done VR. It's pretty cool. That would be really cool to see this game, this video game in VR. Everything will be coming at you, because that's how VR is, right? It comes at you.
Right.
Like, whoa.
Yeah, you're going to be able to see a dragon's mouth opening up and coming right at you. And then, you know, that kind of stuff is funky, so I'm looking forward to testing that.
Oh, definitely. Do you know what? Oh, sorry, I already asked that question. What am I saying here? I kind of jumped ahead of myself. Can you talk about the Altered Reality magazine? What is it all about?
Yeah, sure. So I have a magazine that I'm the editor-in-chief of called alteredrealitymag.com. Mm-hmm. It's an e-magazine that features speculative poetry and speculative fiction. So if you like to read sci-fi, fantasy, dystopian, horror, the gothic, things about cryptids, that's what we're looking for in that magazine. And it's only available online. And about once every quarter, we put out a new edition. It gets updated twice a month, on the 1st and the 15th. So there's new mm-hmm. stories all the time. And it features, you know, a variety of authors. In many instances, you know, we're a first portal to publication for them. This might be the first time they've had their work published by an established brand. And so for us to go in and be able to offer that to others, that people are trying to find that first piece that they can get published, I really enjoy that. It's like paying it forward. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for my friend and my eventual development editor and then my publisher, I wouldn't be where I am. So I like to do the same thing for them. And so being able to pull them in and giving them a platform for their poetry or their fiction mm-hmm. allows me to kind of pay that back, as well as to kind of promote, you know, what I think are some pretty damn good authors, you know, as, you know, I've come to learn, including one we've got up for, you know, a major poetry award this year. So we're bringing in not just quantity of people, but quality of people. Mm-hmm. And continuing to grow the EMAG on a year-to-year basis. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. My model with that, it's always quality over quantity for me, you know? I want to have good quality over quantity first because you want to make sure it is a good product, right?
Exactly. I mean, in our case, you know, we like to bring in folks that have never had a chance to publish and let them, you know, get a feel for what it's like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on the other side, we're looking for folks that already are published or folks that are indie authors that are looking for another place to place their work, you know, and have a new set of eyes look at it. And we get, you know, since the life of the magazine, probably about 170,000 views. So it's well, mm-hmm. it's well healed in that respect and, you know, kind of growing it as a business now. Got our first couple of sponsors to it and the EMAG's taken off.
That's awesome. What do you love about being an author on there?
You know, for me, it was one of my, I benefited from being an author who published on there first. I was published there before I had my books on the marketplace,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I had a chance to write a serial. And, you know, the concept behind that led me, you know, I had to have something ready to go once a month to submit back. And it sounds like that's not a lot of work. But when you're writing a book, one chapter at a time and publishing it one chapter at a time,
mm-hmm.
that chapter has to be perfect. And there are 7 or 8 different edits that go into that. And Kelly, who is a woman who owned the magazine prior to me, was a great editor. She taught me a lot, even sort of baptism in fire. There were things in there that I wasn't even, you know, certain that I was could be able to overcome, but she showed me how to become a better writer. I'm now doing the same thing for others that come to the site. We want to make sure that we're editing their stuff. We're sharing it within a group. We're giving them our feedback so that they have the best product possible when they put it on our mm-hmm. site and we launch it for them. And then we cross promote things with one another. So for me, it was not only a learning experience, but I was an author who enjoyed that portal of publication before I was actually published in my novels. So for me, it was a trial run. It was a real nice learning experience.
Awesome. That's really awesome. What is your process creating an article in the magazine?
So for me, you know, we've got submission guidelines that folks need to adhere to when they submit. You know, from time to time, we close them when we get too many submissions in. But for the most part, we try to keep our submissions open, or, you know, submission portal open to folks. We then bounce it. I have 2 other business partners in there, and we bounce the stories off of one another. If we think that it's worth publishing, we reach out to that author and ask them to edit it with us, to get it to the point where we're comfortable and they're comfortable with the edits. And we'll go ahead and publish that on a monthly basis. In other cases, we accept special submissions for things that are going into our quarterly magazine. And sometimes those are by invite only
mm-hmm.
As part of that. And then, you know, we have just launched I want to say it's not new, but we've launched a very robust social media campaign to promote not only the magazine, but our authors that are in it. So we'll do once a month, author of the month, poetess or the poet of the month, you know, making sure that we're promoting folks where we have a new author of the month. We'll do that too. And when we spotlight them, we'll make sure that their social media and our social media are working together to cross promote it as best as possible. So, you know, it's a great platform for that kind of stuff. And any of your listeners that are looking, you know, for a place, feel free to reach out to me there and mm-hmm. I'd be more than happy to entertain your submissions.
All right. Yeah, definitely. What is today's author's marketplace like today, especially in these trying times with a pandemic?
You know, Amazon has changed things dramatically, right? Like in mm-hmm. the past, in order to be a published author, you were skating uphill. You know, it was really hard to do that. Amazon has brought that opportunity to the masses. And even though I'm not an independent author, I work with a lot of very good, very strong indie authors. And what Amazon has done is taken what was once a very shallow pool that mm-hmm. only you could break through if you had an agent and a publisher that was going to do that for you. And they've blown it up into something that they get almost, you know, upwards to 80,000 new pieces a month, not a year, a month. And so by the end of the year, you're talking about nearly a million new pieces of literature out there. Some are better than others, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, and it's hard to get recognized in a giant sea of that stuff, you know? So in order to do that, you've got to sort of grab the bull by the horns and say, look, you know, I'm going to get into this self-promoting. And even though I have a publisher, we promote one another, right? You know,
right.
because it's important for me to do that. And so you reach out to other authors, you reach out to groups of writers, you find people on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, you know, Bookstagram, Book Talk, wherever you can find groups, and you promote within where you're allowed to promote within. You know, and I think that the marketplace has changed so dramatically in the last 10 years since mm-hmm. Amazon's done what they've done. It's really allowed, you know, folks to get that portal where before they might not have, you know, been the right story at the right time. And, you know, I think that the traditional publishing world, you know, continues to ride on waves. Like, you know, a few years ago, we saw a lot of vampire novels, then we saw a lot of dystopian novels. And they have a tendency to be cyclical, right?
Right.
You know, and I think that, you know, with the, you know, the indie author marketplace, it kind of, it's blown up. You know, you can get anything mm-hmm. at any time, anywhere on demand, right?
And right,
it's,
yeah.
You know, so it's really created, you know, a Wild West. And so, you know, as an indie author or someone who's uses, you know, publishes through a small publishing house, it's competitive. You've got to get mm-hmm. out there. And the way you win is doing shows like this, you know, doing social media to make sure people know you, that you're there, hitting conventions, doing book signings, going to book, you know, book clubs, doing book tours, going to libraries, going to, you know, places where I've signed books in comic book stores because my stuff is very comic-ish. You know, I've signed mm-hmm. books. I had 20 people come to see me at a brewery. You know, it was like a local microbrewery out where I live, mm-hmm. you know, and it's because they had their book club there. So you hit those things, and you can't look at it and say, well, there's only 5 or 10 or 20 people here. You got to look at that and say, I'm going here to sell 5 or 10 or 20 books. Mm-hmm. While I'm here, I'm going to get 20 email addresses that I'm going to add to my email list that I'm going to be able to revisit when the next book comes out and the next. And that way you kind of build your readership that way. So, you know, it's hard. It's not for the faint of heart. I treat it like my own business. Like I literally, I'm the brand and my books are my product. Mm-hmm. So like the kind of stuff I write, you know, I have to proselytize on my own. Like I have to get out there and, you know, herald from the high hills so people know that I'm there because they're just drowning in what's available through Amazon, and or they're, you know, they're competing against, you know, some of the big 4, big 5 publishers that mm-hmm. you know, you can't compete against because they've got everything on lock, right? So
right,
it's
yeah.
a way of trying to find your way through there, and hopefully you can find some success in doing that.
Exactly. And Amazon is just so huge now. They have a thing called Amazon Music, and you can put your podcast on there. Because I got an email from them like, huh? I thought it was a joke, but it wasn't. I read it like 5 or 6 times. Like, oh, wait a second. I put it on Amazon now? It's amazing.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. They are a monster in the business. And mm-hmm. you got to respect that. A lot of people don't like Amazon because of that. But what it's done is it's really brought this opportunity to the masses.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't necessarily have to be Stephen King to find a way to publish your book. Now you can publish it. And if you get the right audience for it and you get the right following for it and you do the right kind of social media for it, you know, you could be pretty successful in this business without having to have that kind of brand name.
Yeah. And I've learned over the years, I've been doing all of this for almost 18 years in December, which is a long time for me. But I mean, it's just promote. That's the way you get yourself out there.
Yeah. You know, it's a contact sport, right? Mm-hmm. The more you contact people, the better you're going to be, you know, so you got to do shows like this. If you're me, you got to do, you know, like the weekend gigs at the, mm-hmm. you know, at the coffee shops and, you know, work with, you know, book clubs and, you know, head out to conventions when you can,
mm-hmm.
because that's where you're going to get exposure.
Exactly. When I'm out, I actually, in my backpack, I have a folder with like a thing of information. So what I do is someone starts talking to me about it, and I was like, okay, here, oh, wait a second, I have some information for you, and I hand it out to them. So it's great to have that little piece of information to hand out, and, you know, that's how you, it's just the, what do you call that? I'm trying to think of the word. Networking,
like
I guess.
Collateral material or leave behind or...
Networking, I think it's called.
Networking.
Yeah. So yep. I've actually handed a whole pile of them this year, too. It's amazing. But, you know, it's just getting out there, getting your name out there, getting your product out there. It's what's really important in the end.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's the way, I know we were joking about it a little earlier, but, you know, networking is the heart of sales.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to get out and meet people or else they're not going to know who you are. And I see that You know, I think authors have a tendency to be introverted, you know, and you can't be introverted when you're selling. You got to be out there standing up at your desk and selling. You have to be at the libraries. You've got to go to the book clubs. You got to go to the conventions and meet people and shake hands and get to know them. And then that will convert to sales.
Yeah, very true. Is there a website or social medias of yours you like to promote?
Yeah, sure. So my website's really easy. It's www.jvhilliard.com. You can find me at JV Hilliard Books on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And if you go to just JV Hilliard on Facebook and Discord, you'll find me there.
Okay, yeah. Okay, awesome. I want to thank you for coming on the podcast today, JV. It's really a pleasure to finally chat with you about your book and the video game. I look forward to reading the books and playing your video game. And I'll definitely stay in touch with you over the next while.
I will. I'll send you my books so that you can read them, and I'll let you know when the video game comes out. And thank you very much for having me. It's been an honor.
No problem. As always, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, whether you're listening to it on YouTube or on audio only, whether it's iTunes, Spotify, CastBox, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, any of those platforms. Be sure to hit the subscribe button. Also, you can follow Crispy on the Web on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Crispy on the Web. And I'll see you guys next week for another interview podcast, which will be with Lois about a dating app coming out. So be sure to stay tuned for that. Until then, have a good one. Bye for now. Entertainment Man Podcast is a weekly radio podcast produced by Crispy on the Web Media. All rights reserved. Any illegal reproduction of this content will result in immediate legal action.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week again for a fresh round.
It's the Entertainment Man Podcast.